Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from UCF Continuing Education, offering professional development and corporate training services for the modern workforce. UCF Continuing Education provides a range of courses and workshops available in person or online, designed to enhance skills and knowledge in various fields. More at ce.ucf.edu.
I'm Mark Middleton along with Bill Schaefer, and this is Growing Bolder, the worldwide movement that is rebranding aging and redefining what's possible as we age.
Coming up in just a minute, the guy had a hit single at the age of 9, and now the youngest member of the world-renowned Osmond family is celebrating his 50th anniversary in show business with a tribute to his mentor, Andy Williams.
We're also going to talk to the 87-year-old Pied Piper of fitness who says we are all over-medicated and under-trained. Plus, we've got the former Marine who came out of retirement in his late 50s and returned to combat in Iraq and Afghanistan 3 decades after leaving the Corps.
Also, you'll hear from the plus-sized yogi, magazine cover girl, and social media star who's inspiring men and women to take up yoga. And the TV writer and radio personality who has written for some of the best shows in television history. She's going to write us all a prescription for getting over illness with humor. All today on Growing Bolder.
Oh, I can't get there without you. I need you by my side. Some things are just meant to be. No, I won't.
No.
Bill Schaefer here with Mark Middleton, and our next guest has been part of the entertainment world, and this is going to blow your mind, for half a century, ever since he made his debut on the Andy Williams Show at the age of 3.
Yeah, wasn't he adorable? Still is, I'm told, folks. Of course, he had his famous family to help him through it all. He is the youngest member of the Osmond family, but of course, this show is Growing Bolder, and it's what he's doing now that makes him every bit as proud. Let's find out more as we say hello to Jimmy Osmond. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, guys, how are you?
We're doing great. Thanks for your time. And first of all, one thing that we've learned on this show is that everybody needs somebody at some point to stick their neck out for them in life. And Andy Williams did that for the Osmonds. Do you know why?
You know, I don't know for sure, but he was family to us, really, because my brothers were first discovered by Walt Disney. And that's where Andy's father, Jay Williams, saw my brothers, and it reminded him of the Williams brothers, which Andy was the youngest of the Williams brothers quartet, because they sang Barbershop, you know. And Andy's dad talked Andy into putting the brothers, my brothers, on, you know, one or two shows, just as kind of a cute throwback to their early days. And the male response was so huge that we ended up becoming, you know, regulars and singing on his records and touring the world with him as his featured act. And it was just such an amazing, amazing thing that happened. And what's really the good news about it all is that friendship lasted a lifetime. And before he passed away, he had asked me, because, you know, he knew I ran theaters and he was my neighbor and friend, and he said, Jimmy, I really want to be remembered for my music, and I want my legacy to continue. Because, you know, and since the 60s, the Andy Williams Christmas show is an American tradition and uninterrupted. And so I was so nervous. I mean, never in a million years as a three-year-old boy starting on his show would I think I'd end up owning his theater and touring the world with his shows. And that's what happened.
You want to sing a song? What are you going to sing?
Red roses for a blue lady.
Red roses for a blue lady. Do you need an orchestra?
I sing with my group.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Jimmy and his group.
I want some red roses for a blue lady, Mr.
blessing because people just love to remember him, you know, because he touched so many lives.
And what Jimmy's talking about here is he does an entire show, well, that almost the entire show, dedicated to Andy. He does a couple of Osmond tunes in there, but the show's called Moon River and Me. He's done it in Branson. He's taken it all over the world. Jimmy, this is just to say thanks to the guy who gave your family his start?
Well, you know, it was a pet project of Andy's. He actually did a DVD called Moon River and Me, and he selected footage from his treasure trove of, you know, old Hollywood celebrities that performed on his show, and that's what he wanted to see happen. And so I produced this show at my theater just as kind of a small tribute to him. And when promoters started seeing what it was and how it was produced with so much love and respect, that, you know, I started getting calls. And coming up here, we play Vegas, and then I fly over to the UK to do 27 one-nighters there. But Japan and all over the world has loved Andy so much. And I think it's really kind of special because I think anyone in my family could actually pull this show off because of the connectivity that we had with him over the years. And so people know that it comes from a real honest place as far as telling the story and singing the award-winning songs. You know, I had somebody come up to me. I did a show in New Mexico a couple of days ago, and this guy came up just crying. And he said, "Thank you so much for singing Hawaiian Wedding Song, you know, because that was my wife's and my, you know, our special song, and she's gone now." And so it's really interesting to watch people listen to this music because it takes them back to their lives when they were the big hits for them.
You know, it's great to hear that you're still getting the kind of enjoyment out of it that you are. Folks, we're talking with Jimmy Osmond, and if you really don't fully understand just how talented Jimmy was right from the beginning, first of all, he was the first Osmond to earn a gold record, I think. And, of course, you'll remember the song.
And, boy, do I love to rub that in.
Amen. You know, use it all you can. And folks, you got to remember the song One Bad Apple, because a lot of us thought that was actually Michael Jackson. But no, it was Jimmy. And you guys were actually pretty close with the Jacksons back in the day, weren't you, Jimmy?
Well, I actually worked with Michael. You know, we were friends at the time. You know, we were having hit records, and I was the little one that would come on, and I was more like the mascot, you know. And it was kind of cool later in life. I spent a lot of time in Japan because I had hit records there in Japanese, and I would get offers to take to my friends that I had grown up with, and I took Michael an offer, and he had a better one than I had, and he still took mine. And I was just so grateful because, again, it was just such a gesture that it wasn't about money. It was about friendship, and it was about wanting to help me. And it started me off being a concert promoter. So, yeah, when Michael came out with the album, the Bad Album, you know, and Smooth Criminal and all those, we were involved in licensing those for him and presenting the Pacific Rim dates from Michael for about 2 years. All I did was package it and raise the sponsorship money, but it was kind of cool to have, you know, grown up as a kid, similar style in life, and to end up actually helping some of these artists that were friends, you know.
Here's kind of a different topic for you, Jim. I guess it was about 10 years, maybe a little more now, that you had a pretty major health scare. I know that you had a stroke and that you were really fortunate to recover physically, but how did going through that and going through that heart valve thing that you had too, how did that change the way you look at life?
Well, you know, it sounds a lot worse than it was because it was just a small TI that was non-debilitating in any way other than it made me need reading glasses a bit early. But, you know, a lot of people have this. And what was kind of cool about it was because I had that incident, I was performing on stage, and all of a sudden it felt like this massive headache, and I couldn't see very well. And because I had that surgery, we found out that several of my family members had the same birth defects. You know, like when you're in your mother's womb, you know, this little valve thing doesn't close on a lot of people, and that can result in just tragedy with, you know, a brain clot or something like that. Anyway, I'm 100% fine and healthy, but I do I will tell you, when they did that surgery, you know, I have four beautiful little kids, amazing wife, and life was so good, and I was just like, wow, nobody's immune to, you know, facing these things, and we all have to just enjoy our lives every day at a time, and just savor the moment, what God's given us, because it's like, it does make you look at things a little deeper than just being superficial, especially in show business. Show business is such a phony business if you allow that craziness to get to you. You know what I mean?
So how have you survived to this moment with the attitude that you have in the grasp on life? Because, I mean, as we mentioned, at 3 years old, you were internationally known. You hung out with people like Michael Jackson. The music industry is just filled with the destruction of not only talent but human beings in its wake. And here's Jimmy Osmond still cranking along with a great attitude, a wonderful family, and a great take on life. How have you done that, Jimmy?
Well, I don't know if I've got anything figured out, but I will tell you, I had great parents, and I remember having the number one Christmas record in England on my own, and I went to my dad and I said, "Hey, Dad, I'm number one. Isn't that cool?" And he gave me a stick with a little poker on the end of it, and he says, "Go clean up the yard, son," because we lived in an apartment complex that we had, and it was just that kind of training. He was an Army sergeant, and you know, they had Christian beliefs and values, and they never allowed us to think we were all that, you know. And I never thought show business would ever last for me, so I never took myself very serious. And I usually was the brunt of a lot of jokes growing up because I was, you know, on TV all the time as a little kid, you know. And I just learned to roll with it, and I was always open to try anything, you know, behind the scenes or producing shows or, you know, and I ended up doing a lot of different jobs. And I think that's what I love, is the fact that I've never allowed it to get boring for me. I love what I do. I don't have to be the star of anything. I'm just happy to be part of the team. And I think I owe it all to my parents, and also whatever religion you are, you know, if you're a good Christian guy and you know that God loves everybody the same, and it matters how you treat each other, and that there's something more than just this life, I think that really gives you some grounding and perspective that allows you to make better decisions. And I applaud anybody that isn't in the spotlight that makes good decisions, because it's easy when everyone's looking at you to feel that extra responsibility. But the average guy that just goes to work every day, that lives a good life and treats people right, to me, those are the people that are the heroes, you know.
So, Jimmy, you're an inspiration. We can add that to the list of everything
else.
I'm just
a guy trying to figure it out, trying to be a good daddy, and I've been in the business 50 years, which is just, and I don't say that with any sort of badge of honor. I just am shocked. And I never was that good at any of this stuff, but I was just willing to try my hardest, whether it was musical theater or sweeping up behind real stars. And it's kind of, it's blessed my life to be able to have a good family and to have people that were our mentors because of Andy Williams, you know, that were, you know, you tell people stories about them, and they don't believe you because they've become legendary.
And Jimmy,
but they cared about us because our parents were so approachable and just kind to everyone up and down that ladder of success that we had. And we've been up and on the bottom, and we're still here to talk about it.
And I think, Jimmy, that's why all of us root for you to continue with your successful journey. He is a great entertainer and a delightful person. He still spends a lot of time out on the tour, so go to jimmyosmond.com to see when he'll be near you, maybe even with Moon River and me or a couple of members of his family at the same time. Our thanks to Jimmy Osmond.
That some things are just meant to be.
Coming up, we're going to hit the pool for a deep water running workout with one of the most inspirational 87-year-olds alive. You better believe she is growing bolder. Growing Bolder and Humana are celebrating the opportunity of aging and smashing stereotypes with the new 65 Plus. We're sharing examples of people 65 and older who are pursuing their passions and leading happy, healthy, and active lives. You can inspire others by sharing your own photos and stories. Find more information at growingbolder.com/new65plus.
The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest. Bill Schaefer and Mark Middleton back with more Growing Bolder. I want to tell you about Ann Kahl. She's the kind of friend that all of us wish we had. She's an encouraging, supportive, and inspirational Pied Piper of health and fitness. And here's what she believes. We are all over-medicated and under-trained.
Yeah, hard to argue with that. And here's what really makes Ann unique. She will do just about anything to help anyone live a healthier and more active life. 87-year-old Ann Kahl loves to run, except during the oppressive summer heat. She was fascinated to read about deep water pool running in a magazine, but the article provided no real details, so she invented her own program and then wrote, hand-lettered, and illustrated a how-to book to share with others.
They don't have to say, oh, I can't do that, it's too hot, or whine. No, get out there and do it. It's fun.
Anne is such a great motivator, and she just draws people into her circle.
Oh, does this feel good?
Yeah. Oh.
Or in this case, into her pool. Anne was soon leading a weekly deep water running workout. A special flotation belt allows them to emulate the movements of cross-country skiing, bicycling, hurdling, and more, all using the water as resistance and providing a low-impact workout even on the hottest summer days.
Anne wants everybody to be healthy and happy, and she does whatever she can do, and she offers whatever she can offer to help you make that goal.
Terry Barnes was overweight and in declining health, and her doctor was concerned.
She said my cholesterol was high, and I had osteopenia, the precursor to osteoporosis, and she wants to give me lots of pills. And I was like, you know, I'm really not much into that, so I said, give me 3 months.
Terry had no idea what she was going to do until, right on cue, Anne showed up at her house.
We live across the street from each other, but we really didn't know each other that well. And one day she just walked into the garage and said, I have a gift for you. And she brought this, not knowing that I was going through this. So I opened it up and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like my angel, because she brought this just when I needed it.
This was another one of Anne's handmade books on fitness. Terry immediately joined Anne's backyard workout group and her life began to change.
A little after we started working out, she said, how would you like to run? And I said, I can't run. So she said, well, let's sign up for a race 5K this weekend. I'm like, this weekend? You've got to be kidding me. She said, it'll be fine. I'll do it with you. We'll run and then we'll walk. And I had so much fun. We finished the 5K. I didn't fall on my face. And it was so much fun. I said, I want to do this. So that's when I started running. And that was at age 59. So I've lost the weight that I wanted to lose. I never had to go on the medication.
Okay, go.
Doctors prescribing medication instead of lifestyle modification is one of Anne's pet peeves.
If you sit there and watch the commercials on television, take this drug, oh, and these people are, they look so happy because they're taking this drug. And then they tell you all the side effects, and it takes about 30 seconds for them to list all the side effects. And then it says, ask your doctor if this is right for you. And I'm thinking, I don't need to ask my doctor that. I know that it's not right for me. No. Don't do that. Don't do that. Ask your doctor if exercise is right for you. And your doctor won't know what the heck you're talking about. Period.
Anybody she runs into, she just tells them little tidbits about life. And that little tidbit can turn into a whole life transition. And she's really a great, great woman.
You're amazing.
Oh, so are you.
Thank you for inspiring me to keep going.
Thank you. Stay with him.
Ann is also an accomplished triathlete who enjoys everything about race day.
One reason it's fun to go to triathlons is the bodies. Oh, I mean, I'm old, but I'm not dead yet. You know what I mean?
A retired graphic artist, Ann still practices the dying art of calligraphy for appreciative clients worldwide.
There's some things a computer can't do. One of them is to take gold ink and make this very fancy lettering. A computer can't do that.
She also creates 150 hand-drawn motivational calendars every year. Half are donated to local charities for fundraising, and the rest are gifts for her friends. As for her book on deep water running, she'll make one for anyone who wants it for no charge.
Greedy dies here. Greed. Ugh. No greed. No greed. Give it. Yes, it's free.
And here's her free advice for all of us.
Break out and find new horizons, no matter how old, no matter, there's always something new.
For Ann, that something new might just be her latest infatuation, the extremely difficult workout video, The Body Beast.
So you just look at that. You don't actually do that.
Oh, yeah. We do this. Oh, yes, we do.
Ann Call is an 87-year-old Pied Piper of health and wellness who looks forward to at least another decade of active life and to adding a new shirt to her wardrobe every year.
My health insurance is on my feet, my running shoes. That's it.
Boy, isn't she something? Wow. And Ann says that most of us find far too many excuses to skip workouts, so taking running to the pool was one way to eliminate the excuse that it's just too hot. And since we did that story, folks, we have had many, many people reach out and take Ann up on her offer to make a book at no charge for anyone who wants one.
You know, she is remarkable at any age, but her passion for living and staying active at age 87, that's really amazing. But she says, stick around and see what I'm up to at age 97.
Up next, the oldest Marine talks about his motivation for returning to combat in both Iraq and Afghanistan 3 decades after leaving the Corps. This is the guy who's growing bolder.
Stay connected to Growing Bolder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for our latest stories and motivational pictures. Schaefer here with Mark Middleton on Growing Bolder, and one thing that seems to come up a lot on this show is that you never know when, in the blink of an eye, your whole life can change completely.
Yeah, which is why we say we have to learn to embrace that change. You know, our next guest never expected that after 30 years following his tour of duty as a Marine, that he would find himself back in combat, and at the age of 59, no less. It's why he's just written a fascinating book that's called The Silence of War, An Old Marine in a Young Marine's War. Let's welcome Terry McGowan. Hi, Terry.
Hi, guys.
Hey, thanks so much for your time. Thanks so much for your service. And I know when Bill was referring to the course of your life changing in the blink of an eye, he was talking about the attack on the World Trade Center and the events of 9/11. How did that affect you personally?
My first thought was, I'm sorry I retired from the FBI. I was glad when I did retire. It was a great organization to work for, great work. I enjoyed the people. I enjoyed the work. But it was very, very stressful. It was I wasn't sorry to leave the stress behind. So, but on that day, I wished I was still back. We knew that they were trying to take down the World Trade Center. We knew that for some time. They tried several years prior by detonating a van full of explosives in the basement. It didn't work. So, you know, I thought, wow, I could get right back into this and help these guys crack this case. But that wasn't to be. So, you know, next best thing was join the Marine Reserve. I called the recruiting officer, and he was interested at first. And then when he heard my age, he almost choked on his coffee. And he said, I quipped in the book that he said, don't call us, we'll call you, but only if aliens from outer space invade Los Angeles. So I kind of knew in that moment I wanted to get back into war, but I finished law school, and then so many young guys that I knew were joining up and going over and not coming back, and it really started to eat at me because my brother calls me a mutant because I'm so fit for my age, and despite what it said on my birth certificate, I knew I could do the job.
But still, Terry, you were older. You were older than the rest. You were older than any Marine over there, and age, I guess, in their thoughts, can be a big detriment. So was it a detriment? Was it a disadvantage, or were there some ways in which your age was an asset?
My age was definitely an asset, because with age comes experience. And so I had the experiences of a trained Marine officer, and I had the experiences of a 20-year lawman, including an FBI agent. Those are experiences you can't get if you're a youngster. Example, my first night at Gulistan, I went out on patrol, and I came back the next day and said, there's no Taliban in town. And they looked at me, and they said, how do you know? I said, because I heard music. The Taliban don't like music. They beat you if they hear music. Hmm. They'll tolerate religious music, but they won't tolerate good time music, and I heard good time music, therefore there's no Taliban.
Terry McGowan, who reenlisted with the Marines at the age of 59, he's written a book all about it called The Silence of War. And Terry, we go to the movies, and certainly Hollywood likes to tell stories of war, but I think few of us have a real idea of what actually happens in a war zone. What is the reality? What did you see there that surprised you or changed you?
Well, the first thing I can say about movies is that if you watch things in real time, you'd be bored to tears. For example, my book is about the whole total is probably about experiences that they cover over a year. Try and make a movie and watch it for a year. You know, you just won't do it. Even the battles, the first attack lasted 3 hours. You know, most of that is trading fire or without effect, and sometimes there's lulls and, you know, whatever. You wouldn't want to watch that on the silver screen. So the silver screen makes everything happen fast and furious, and keeps it interesting. Even the most realistic movies. In reality, it's not quite that way.
So, Terry, let me just ask you, basically, what is it that you want us to know? Why did you write the book, and what's your message?
Well, that's a great question, and the title, The Silence of War, really cuts right to the chase. When I started to write the book, I was just writing, you know, what happened. And I sent the rough draft to a great friend of mine over there. He's in the book, Zach Wolf. And I said, what do you think? And he said, I can only read half of it, and I started to cry. He said, my little daughter climbed in my lap and said, don't cry, Daddy, you can have my teddy bear. And Zach said, you've got to write this book. He said, I want my family to know what I went through, and I can't do it. I can't tell them. And that's what the silence of war is. Guys who go to war don't talk about it. They just don't. They might, you know, on occasion, you know, have a few too many beers and tell you some story or other, but typically they don't talk except to each other. And my book is different in that I tell you what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, what I'm seeing in real time. And there's guys who are my friends, my family are going to read this book, and they're going to find out things about me they didn't know. The guys I was over there with are going to find out things they didn't know. For example, when I walked into an empty container and cried. You know, they don't know that. It's in the book. So the silence of war is broken by this book. It's not silent anymore. And you can kind of extrapolate that, you know, my experiences were kind of typical of everybody else's. I mean, there's a saying at the end of the movie Jarhead that all wars are different and all wars are the same. I think that's true. Certainly, you know, our war in Afghanistan was nothing like Vietnam. It was nothing like Korea. It was nothing like Okinawa or Iwo Jima. But in some respects, it was the same. You lose friends. You know, people are shooting at you. You're shooting back. There's certain things that are just the same. And so I think my emotional reaction and what have you, which I try and spell out in the book, I think that's going to resonate with a lot of the guys, probably from every war. And and their families too. That's what Zach wanted. He wanted his family to understand him. And when his family reads about me, they're going to understand him better.
Well, Terry, thank you for your service, and thank you for opening our eyes to a reality that a lot of us think we understand but don't quite, and certainly not in the way you bring to life in the book. It's called The Silence of War, An Old Marine in a Young Marine's War. I think this guy's going to be changing some minds and opening some eyes, both about war and about wisdom and the age that goes along with it. Our thanks to Terry McGowan.
Up next, you might have seen her viral photos online, the plus-size yogi who is nailing advanced poses, proving that yoga is for everyone of every size, inspiring men and women worldwide. This is Growing Bolder. We've got news. Watch.growingbolder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Bolder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingbolder.com is now live. I'm Mark Middleton, along with Bill Schaefer, and this is Growing Bolder. And for years, our next guest battled binge eating, fad diets, bouts of depression and anxiety. She had a very low self-esteem and was just about to give up on ever finding peace and happiness.
Here's where something interesting happened. She found a path to that inner peace, Mark, through yoga, and her life started to change dramatically. She is now a plus-size yogi, a magazine cover girl, a social media star, and most important to us, a great inspiration to many, many people worldwide. That's why we wanted to get her on the program. Let's say hi to Dana Falsetti. How are you, Dana?
Hi, guys. I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
You know, your story really dropped us in our tracks. You were in college, and the scales hit around 300 pounds, and you were not a happy person, and you figured maybe it was because of your weight. So you lost 70 pounds, and you found you still were not happy. What was wrong?
Well, it took me a little while to figure that out, about maybe 20 years or so. I always equated my size to sort of everything else in my life. So I wouldn't do certain things because I was big, or I would think about myself a certain way because I was big. And I let that really be my identifier, because I felt like other people identified me that way. So I was convinced that I had to get smaller, I had to lose weight, and then that was going to be the thing that was going to make everything better, because I really kind of hated myself at that point. I didn't like the way that I looked, and I felt really kind of confused and stagnant in my life. And so I went on this really long weight loss journey for about a year, year and a half, and lost those 70 pounds. And I had yo-yoed up and down with my weight many times before, trying different fad diets and, you know, fat camp and all sorts of different things, but I could never keep it off. And this time I did keep it off, but it's because after I lost all that weight is when I started my yoga practice. And that was sort of unintentional. It happened because I came home for the summer after that year of losing weight when I was in college. And there was a yoga studio by my house that had a student special for the summer, unlimited classes, and I started going. And it just changed everything. It opened my eyes to the fact that, well, I started encompassing my body, and I started approaching these limits that I talk about all the time on my mat, these poses that I thought I was never going to be able to do because of my body. And they started becoming possible. And those were the moments that I realized that my whole life, it was never my body that was stopping me from doing things or making me feel a certain way. It was me and my self-limiting thoughts that were doing that to myself.
Boy, a great message for all of us, no matter what we're struggling with. And Dana, I can only imagine that first class, because as I understand it, here you are, you know, almost at rock bottom, dealing with low self-esteem. You walk into a yoga class, of all things, larger, I'm guessing, than anyone in class, a pure beginner, not in great shape. Nothing about that had to be easy. What made you keep going?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was. My first few classes really sucked. I really couldn't hold even the poses that they were calling resting poses, and there were other people in the room doing way more advanced transitions and all sorts of things, and I did feel super intimidated. I was surprised by how hard it was. But I'm the type of person who likes a challenge, for sure, and I'm also, you know, back then, and I was talking about this the other day, actually, in an interview, back then, the early parts of my practice were really fueled by pride in the beginning, because I wanted to prove everybody wrong. So it started by me continuing to go back because I had to show everybody that I could be the fat girl who could do a headstand, because I felt so limited my whole life. And now it was like, okay, I'm here and I'm going to prove myself wrong. And I'm going to show all these people what's what. And eventually, as I continued to practice, that just changed. And I started showing up because yoga made me feel really good. And I was starting to realize things about myself and about my body, and my body was changing, and I got, you know, sort of addicted to practicing because of the way that it made me feel. And it was the first time that I ever had anything like that in my life, where I was doing it completely for me and creating my own results and not worrying about anybody else.
You know what's great about you, Dana, is you're such an inspiration to all of us, because we all think, well, maybe we should do more. Maybe we should try yoga. But
yeah,
this negative self-talk that we all are inclined to have really can stop any of us in our tracks. So how did you overcome that little voice in your head telling you that, get out of here, this isn't going to work?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the hardest part. And I get questions every day from people who are just like, well, where does the discipline come from? I mean, how do you quiet those thoughts? How do you learn to like yourself? Like, what do you do? And for me, discipline comes directly from your self-worth. So when you believe that you're not worthy of whatever it is, you're not going to do it. And that's how I felt my whole life. That's how a lot of people feel in various ways their whole lives. So as soon as you start to build up that self-worth, and that is something that takes time and patience and practice and actual work, because I believe that we sort of lose that along the way as we grow up, and then we get to a place where you have to start building that back into yourself. So I started doing that through my yoga practice, and it doesn't have to be yoga. There are so many things that people can do to build up that confidence and that self-worth. But once you have that, the discipline comes from there, because you wake up every day. I wake up every day and I say, I'm worth, you know, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it is, on my mat just to do this for myself, because it's the best thing that I can do for me.
Folks, we're talking with Dana Falsetti, who at 300 pounds, you know, was almost ready to give up. And then she found yoga. And she mentioned these advanced poses that she does. And you really should Google her, Dana Falsetti. She's got a website, danafalsetti.com. And Dana, fair to say, you're still not a petite woman. And you are doing some very advanced poses. The kind of photos we just don't see anywhere. And I'm guessing that the response that generates is twofold. People that admire you, that want to be like you, that are inspired by you, and all of the haters that are out there in social media. I mean, you've got nearly 100,000 people following your Instagram. How do you deal with the both ends of this social media response that you get?
Yeah, so it kind of fluctuates. I've noticed that there are certain times or certain things that I'll post that seem to generate a lot of hate, and other things that don't at all. So kind of funny like that. Mostly I just ignore it. I mean, every once in a while, the hateful part, I mean, mostly I ignore it, but every once in a while, it gets to me a little bit, just because I'm only human. But I know that all of that, quite frankly, is just bullshit. And, you know, it's insecurity and people finding ways to make themselves feel better by bringing down others on the internet, which is really just pretty cowardly. So I just let those people do what they're going to do. And honestly, the people who support me usually come at them before I do. So I just leave them be. And in terms of everybody else, I mean, I just welcome it. You know, I get emails all the time. I get to meet so many people as I travel and teach workshops. And, you know, it's absolutely amazing. It can be overwhelming for me at times, because I meet so many people who feel like they know me, you know, from social media. So it can be energetically a little bit draining to interact with so many people. But as long as the message is authentic and intentional and what I'm doing is helping to inspire other people to live their best lives, then I'm very happy to continue.
Well, she is Dana Falsetti, and we wanted to bring Dana to you to prove that not only is yoga pretty much for any of us, but even more importantly, we are all not only worthy of self-love, we need it. To learn more about Dana, her personal transformation, and the amazing work she's doing to help and inspire others, do check out DanaFalsetti.com.
Up next, she's written for some of the top comedy shows in TV history, including Mary Tyler Moore and Bob Newhart, and now she's writing for you. Susan Silver is next.
Sign up for the Growing Boulder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingboulder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Boulder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingboulder.com/podcasts. This is Growing Boulder. I'm Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton, and we're going to talk now with someone who has had a profound effect on some of the greatest TV comedies that we all grew up with. She wrote episodes for That Girl with Marlo Thomas. She wrote for Mary Tyler Moore. Remember Maude, The Bob Newhart Show, Love American Style, all tremendous programs.
Yeah, some of the greatest in television history. And you know, Bill, what really makes her more remarkable is that at that time, in that era, writers, with very few, if any, exceptions, were men. She was one of the very first women to push her way through against all odds and to make a major and undeniable contribution to the shows that she worked on. She's still extremely creative, hosting the podcast Susan Says, and oh, come on. She's a go-to guest on the Today Show whenever the topic comes to boomers, coping with all of life's many challenges. Let's find out what she's up to now as we say hello to the one and only Susan Silver. Hey, Susan, how are you?
Oh, my gosh, I feel like I died, and that was my obituary. Thank you. That was amazing. One little quick thing. My That Girl was written with a partner, and they never shot it because she was going to get married. And Marla decided, as a feminist of the day, she did not want to marry Donald. She wanted to be a single woman. So just want to clarify that.
Well, that's a great clarification. You know, one of the best developments since we talked to you last is that you are finally working on a book, which Bill and I were talking about the other day. We can't wait for it. You have worked with everybody. You got so many stories. You've got such a sharp and interesting perspective on aging. How is the book going, Susan? When can we expect it?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm so glad you brought that up. I've changed the title. It is now called, are you ready for this? Famous People I Did Not Have Sex With.
Wow. So it's going to be a short book, huh?
Yeah. Listen, you guys are too busy climbing Mount Kilimanjaro to even care about me. I haven't heard from you for so long. Anyway, the thing is that it's out to publishers, and I will be very honest. Everybody loves it, but they're saying, well, millennials don't know who Mary Tyler Moore was. And I've said to them, there are an awful lot of people, i.e. Growing Boulder people, who are not millennials. So we'll see. Maybe you guys and I will come up with it in some way. But it's really about several things. It's about my zoo-ig-ness, as the Woody Allen movie. I have stood next to or known almost every icon of our generation, which is kind of scary. And then it's about reinventing yourself at different points in your life. And then for someone like me who doesn't have kids, it's about how to find and create a family. I just got a new little granddaughter in Israel from one of the three soldiers that I send to college. I have a little goddaughter here. So, you know, it's got a lot of inspirational things as well as people I did not have sex with.
Well, there's a fourth thing, Susan, as well, and it's overcoming obstacles too, and you've had your share. I know that you had a battle with cancer.
Right. right. I actually didn't even tell you guys that when we were on radio. You know, I've gone through a few things in my life. That's also definitely part of the book. And what saved me, I almost died twice, actually. What saved me was my sense of humor. The cancer, I dealt with in a way that I think is informative and hopefully helpful to people. I know it helps some of my friends now. I decided to give it 20%. And the rest of my life was 80%. I had a strange kind of spleen cancer, which was discovered just by accident at a routine gynecological exam, my 6 months. So women out there, make sure you have your 6 month gynecological appointment. I thought my tummy was a little big. I thought I was just overeating. But no, it was a non-Hodgkin's B-cell lymphoma in my spleen. But I was very fortunate. They got it in time, no surgery, just chemo. And as all women are, we're afraid I'll lose our hair, and that was like, my hair has like been my bete noire my whole life. I have like 4 strands, and I lost it, and you know what? It didn't matter. I got 2 really cute wigs. I looked really fine in them. My hair grew back curlier and fuller. So the point being, though, I was even surprised, because I'm somebody, I always joke, I say when I have a broken fingernail, I feel it's a trauma. But I was able to cope with this in a lot better than I thought or my friends thought. So I think we're all a little more resilient than we think we are.
You know, we're more resilient, and we still have the passion, the energy, and the desire to do what we do best. And, you know, folks, this is Susan Silver, who wrote some of the best comedy shows in the history of television. And, Susan, I can't help but think of you when I'm watching shows like the Emmys or, the Emmys in particular, so many women now being celebrated, being honored, you know, playing major roles in the creation, the direction, the writing of all of these shows. Is there a little bit of you that thinks, man, I came along a little too early, or do you?
Oh, no. I'm thrilled, because I have to tell you, when a book comes out like last year's Mary Tyler Moore book by Jennifer Aniston, and I get a lot of interviews and things like that, I'm amazed at how many people of all generations were cheered on by that show and were encouraged. So I'm very happy to have been in that wave. Of course, I was only 2 at the time. So, you know, writing in kindergarten was a bit of a burden. But other than that, I'm very happy to have been of that era.
And, you know, we're happy to put a little bit of spotlight on you, because you really were one of the few who laid the foundation, who paved the way for the Tina Fey's, the Amy Poehler's, you know, the people that are doing it today.
No, I feel actually there was, when I first started out, I was one of them, started Women in Film, which was the first little group of women together. And now they don't even need a group. They're so big. But no, it still hasn't reached parity with directors, I don't think. I don't think directors, women are hired as much as that. But, you know, like everything else in life, I say, if you have a sense of humor, you can get through anything. So very, very briefly, if we have time, I want to tell you about my near-death experience and how I got through it. Do we have time for that?
Go for it, Susan. We've always got time for your near-death experiences.
Yeah, that's right. And always with me, it's comedic. I swallowed the shard of a chopstick that I didn't even eat with. I had ordered in Chinese food one night in 2000, and somehow there was a shard in the food, and I didn't know it. I was very sick that night, but I had to get on the plane to go lay my dad's gravestone. He had died the year before, and so I had to be taken off the plane in Milwaukee in a wheelchair, and they couldn't find out what it was for 6 days because wood does not show up in x-rays. So I was close to death with peritonitis, and it was a very interesting time. I had 7 doctors coming in, and I finally made a list of things that you should not do in the hospital. Can I read some to you?
Go for it, Susan.
Number 1, do not watch movies where people die or the news. It will only depress you and scare you more than you already are. Number 2, do not say things in jest like, do I have to slit my wrist to get help from anyone here? They will write it in your chart, and it alarms them. I used to go out and write things in my chart, and they would take the chart away because you're not allowed to see your chart. That's a little tip for people. Number 3, do not look in the mirror after 12 days because your hair is matted in a way that cannot be combed out. The tangles are gross and sweaty. Your skin is a greenish shade and then turns a ghostly white. Are you sick yet? Okay, number 4, do change arms for the IV because you will start to look like a pincushion. I have a lot more, but the most important one for females, or maybe males, number 10, do not, and I mean it, do not let a male aide take your temperature rectally. Is that okay to say on this show?
Now you know, folks, why she is one of our all-time favorite guests. We keep having her back again and again because we never run out of things to talk about. And you can keep up with her by listening to her podcast. Just search for Susan Says on Robinhood Radio and keep an eye out for that book whenever it finally comes out and whatever it's finally called. I still like The Writer Wore Hot Pants. She's one of our favorites, the uplifting and always interesting Susan Silver.
Well, before we go, a reminder that what the mind believes, the body embraces. If you buy into the notion that aging is a time of sadness and regret, a time of weakness, disease, and disability, a time of limited options and diminishing returns, well, that's what it will become. If, however, you believe that aging provides limitless possibility, time to pursue passions and purpose, then that's what it becomes. As we learn every week, aging is not a disease, it's an opportunity, and you seize that opportunity by developing a Growing Bolder lifestyle.
The Growing Bolder radio show is a production of Growing Bolder LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Bolder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. Chief audio engineer is Mac Dula, and our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day. Crimson flames tattooed.